Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Today marks an important milestone for the University of West Florida and Argonaut Athletics. Earlier today, our Board of Trustees voted unanimously to approve the University of West Florida Athletics joining the Atlantic Sun Conference and the United Athletic Conference, transitioning the University of West Florida to NCAA Division I for the fall of 2026.
It's still kind of like, what? So soon? I know this is something that UWF folks and advocates have been asking for a long time, and it's always been the question. I actually thought it was kind of funny yesterday during the announcement in the press conference. Dave Scott, the athletic director, he said, I've been here for all of these, like, campus tours, and every time people come into my office and they just say this is happening, he's like, no, it's not. Not yet.
You know, for years I've sat in my office and listened to campus tours where the students would say, and we're moving Division I. And I'd sort of sit there and chuckle because, you know, I'm inside saying, well, we're not really looking at that right now. It's always been on the radar. I think eventually we always knew we would land in this space, right? And it really makes sense at this time to be in this space. And we're really looking forward to the future of competing with institutions that look like us.
Yeah, and that's kind of the idea, is finding the right fit. And it is kind of funny that people would actually say, no, it's happening, when, yeah, well, I mean, it's not happening yet, but it finally is happening. And, I mean, if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago if, UWF is going to go to Division I, I'd have been like, well, I mean, you know, maybe, eventually. It's a big shift. There's a lot of money involved. There's a lot of logistics involved. What would it mean for all of the other sports is one of the big questions, obviously. That's one of the things that we're, you know, looking at. And joining us now, we have Dr. Judy Bentz. She is, of course, the former, I think she's officially emeritus, but, you know, former president at UWF. And she joins us now, also with a book out. We might get a chance to talk about that. Hey, Dr. Bentz, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News. Great to hear your voice and your chuckle.
Well, hi, Andrew. It's good to talk to you, too. It's been a little while.
It has been. When you made the announcement more than a decade ago and you held up that football helmet, mm-hmm. and you said, we're bringing football to Pensacola, I know there was a part of you that maybe dared to dream this day would finally come to pass, but be for real, what was it like yesterday and thinking about that difference?
It was a big step. And, you know, I did go back to that 2012 when I raised the football helmet. And it kind of seemed surreal yesterday. On the other hand, it seemed like it's about time because we're ready.
No kidding.
I was excited. Yeah.
No, it's fantastic news. Now, you are obviously not the president anymore, but you are involved in a lot of things. You're still teaching, right, at UWF in archaeology?
No, I'm not teaching anymore.
Oh, okay.
I've hung up the chalk, and what I'm doing is a lot of archaeological things.
Okay.
I've been researching and publishing, and this new book just came out.
Right, which I want to make sure we don't pass by without talking about that. So let's just do, like, you know, a moment about the book, because this is not the reason we had you on, but I saw the news came out, you know, in the last couple of days. You've got a new book on it for the 250th anniversary, 250 years of Florida as a Spanish colony. What is the book? What should we look for in it?
The book is called Early Spanish Florida. It's written for the general public. It's got lots of pictures, kind of like a National Geographic article.
Okay.
And it goes from 1513 to 1763, the first 250 years of Florida's experience as a Spanish colony.
Love it. I love it. And, I mean, you're always so good at communicating and explaining things. I can't wait to see it. That'd be fantastic. Back to football, because this, yeah, and I, you know what? Honestly, I was super excited to hear yesterday when President Diaz mentioned that you were involved now on the fundraising side in getting us really across the finish line and continuing to generate fundraising for the football program and for athletics in general. What is your role going to be here?
Well, Gordon Sprague and I are heading up the fundraising for Division I, and we're co-chair of the fundraising committee.
So we got a $2 million price tag up front. I know Manny Diaz, he didn't give a number yet. He said, we're working on it. We're pretty close. That's due by what, June 1st? Is that right?
Right, June 1st. Mm-hmm. So it's a quick deadline.
Yeah, no, that's fast. So do you know how close we are to having that money in hand?
I think we've got about 750 to 800,000. We're almost halfway there.
Okay. And we've got, you know, a couple of months still. So I know you're an optimist.
We do.
And you wouldn't have announced it if you didn't think you could get there, right?
That's a fact. I think we can do it. And, we, you know, we have backup plans, but yes, we need to raise it. But the most exciting thing about all this is we're going to play Division One this fall. This fall.
That's
amazing.
We're
playing Division One. That's amazing. You usually have to wait a year. But where everybody changed their schedules, the Atlantic Sun and the United Athletic League are just, they really want us bad in their league, and they are giving us the chance to play Division One in August of this year.
I can't believe it. Everything changed so quickly. We're talking to Judy Bentz, former president of UWF. Hang on for just a second, Dr. Bentz. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
No problems or delays to report. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Back to Dr. Judy Bentz, of course, one of the key architects for the football program at UWF, former president of UWF, writer, archaeologist, and all the things, and now one of the co-chairs for the fundraising campaign on this move to D1. Mm-hmm. I have questions that were not exactly answered yesterday, but I think, like, if you had asked me a month ago if I understood the difference between Division II and Division I, I would have said, oh, sure, yeah, obviously. And then the more I started thinking about it, I realized I'm not really sure I understand the difference exactly. So what does this really mean, both for football and for the other sports, in terms of money, TV, scholarships, game competition? Like, what is the real difference between D1 and D2?
Everything you mentioned is different. The number of scholarships is different. It's more. The level of competition is different. It's higher. The cost of doing sports, adding the coaches that you have to, is more. The facilities, our facilities are good. The stadium is a huge plus. We've got to upgrade other facilities like baseball, softball, dugouts, and the complex over there. But basically, Andrew, it's more. It's not tremendously more because we're going in at the lower level of Division One, where we should be. And we have 3 years to get all of these things done before we're into Division One play, where we are eligible for championships. They give you some time to get ready, but they see where we are now, and they think we're good enough, all of this is good enough, to play D1 now and take the next 3 years to really dot the I's, cross the T's, and get everything in order.
How do you think, because I know you've thought about this question, I mean yourself, I'm sure, for years and years and years and years and years, and I've been asked this question 1,000 times. How will this affect student life outside of athletics?
Well, I think it's going to improve student life outside of athletics. First of all, we're going to be playing schools that everybody knows. A lot of our students coming out of high school, they look at a university, and they see what level of sports they're playing. They know what Division One. I swear everybody in the country knows what Division One is. It's good. It's fun. It's big. It's pageantry. And if you don't have, if you only have Division II, they go, oh, I don't want Division II. I want to go where they play Division One. It makes a difference. And it adds to, it's really what you need to get to the next level of university's growth and development. And we're no longer knocking on the door, we're in the door.
You know, one of the things Manny Diaz has expressed very clearly is he wants to grow the prestige, the power, the, you know, desirability, mm-hmm. the attractiveness, mm-hmm. grants, he wants to grow the university. And he's kind of said he doesn't really want to grow the size of the university so much because he recognizes that university's small size, its high acceptance rate, its place in the community are kind of unique. In my mind, I kind of feel like you can't have both. If we're going to start to be like an FSU or like a, you know, even a UCF, or if we're going to be like a, you know, a Florida, we're not going to stay at 16,000 people. It's going to be 25, 30, 35,000 people. That seems inevitable to me, but that means a very different reality, right?
Well, I agree. It is different, but I think the key to making all that work is slow growth. For the last 10 years, we've grown by 3-4% every year. President Saunders continued that growth in the post-COVID recovery, and many schools have not been able to do that. So if you don't just have a spike in growth, if you have steady, good growth, you can adjust to that growth like we have over the last 10 years. So that kind of growth is healthy. Now, if you want to stop it, you can. You can raise your standards. You could just limit how many students you take. The big schools, like, let's say Florida State, they can't take any more than, 6,000 freshmen a year. They just don't have the room. And so if you expand slowly with it, you retain that. Now, down the road 10 years from now, we may need to cap enrollment. And that's not too big of a deal. You don't cap it forever. But I think what we have to do is kind of watch it. And the leaders, the administrators in the future need to, you know, strike that balance, Andrew. Which way do we want to get that big or we don't? That is a decision they'll have to make. But going to Division I will definitely keep us on the track of enrollment growth.
And I think that was one of the – I know that was one of the questions that I had, not so much with this announcement, because this is more of a fulfillment of the kind of the vision that Manny Diaz has put out. But – the idea that, right. Like, I have two students, I have two kids who went to UWF. One's there now, one's graduated, and another one might go. He's a nurse, so he might go to stay at PSC. But the point is, you know, the assumption by the locals is if you've got a kid who's going to go to college, they can go to UWF if they want to. It's not particularly exclusive. But if we grow it and if it grows fast, it's going to eventually get to the place where, as you say, enrollment has to be capped and it becomes a little bit more exclusive, maybe right. Very exclusive. And that would be, in some ways, a loss and in some ways, a gain, right?
Right, that's right. And that's a decision that administrators make all the time. And we have long-term plans, we have strategic plans, we have master plans for growth of our buildings and facilities. All of that is taken in consideration. And we always talk about how big do we want to be. I think, personally, probably 20,000. That's a nice cap for this school. We can retain the small school personal touch that we have.
Yeah.
But you don't know. I mean, you know. And but that's my guess. When I said that in 2010, people thought I had lost my mind. 20,000, you're crazy, Ben. You're crazy. And,
well,
this nice growth, I mean, you see the parking lots are full. There's a lot of more student life than before. So we're looking for that sweet spot. And they'll find it. You know, that's their job, too. And, you know, people like me give them my opinion all the time. But they're in charge, yeah.
Well, as you build it, they will come, right? That's kind of the idea.
Well, you know, that's kind of true. I mean, the stadium?
Yeah.
Who would think? It's going to be gorgeous. Just gorgeous. And multi-purpose, lots of different sources of revenue right in the middle of campus. I mean, Andrew, it's going to make a big difference. I think that alone will increase our enrollment. But we have to watch it. We don't want to grow too fast.
You know, one of the things, a lot of attention has been paid to football, obviously. I've asked you about student life outside of athletics. But I do think, to some degree, we've overlooked the other big element of this is a massive change of life and status and practice for all of the non-football sports because they're all going to be part of the ASUN conference, and that is a big shift
right.
for them. And we've talked a little bit about recruiting and about prestige, but for the non-football sports, talk about some of the impacts there. I know you already mentioned scholarships go up and so forth, and the improvement in facilities, which will be a cost but also a benefit. Talk about some of the other sports impacts.
Well, I've talked to the other coaches of softball and volleyball and soccer and golf, and they are ready. They are excited to be going into Division I. We have been so successful in Division II that I don't want to say it's ho-hum, but I'm going to say that every coach and every team wants to play at a higher level, and they want the competition. I mean, to a person, they are ready, they're excited, they can recruit better athletes, they've got more to offer them, and a lot of our recruits go to a Division I school only because we're Division II, or they would be here. So they are looking forward to playing at the next level. They're really excited.
That's good. And, I mean, I know it's going to be more work, but it's more money and it's more challenge and responsibility. I mean, it's all the things, like you say, you know, winners want to win at a higher level when they're able to. And one of the things that I think is a little overlooked in all this is, as Dave Scott mentioned yesterday, in the ASUN, we'll be the third largest school. We are a very big school. We're not like some barely Division I eligible. I mean, you know, Lipscomb and Jacksonville both have around 5,000 people. At 16,000, we're no small player in this market, right?
That's right, and the Division I schools conferences have been trying to get us to join them. But four of them have been after us, and with the ASUN gave us everything we wanted and more. So we and to readjust their schedules of 16 schools to fit us in, like right now,
yeah,
is just amazing. So, I mean, this, we're ready for Division One, and honestly, I think we'll do plenty of winning.
You know, Ed, I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with me this morning. Dr. Judy Bentz, I'm very optimistic, and you're right. The level of accommodation on the kind of the fly like this to let us in so quickly and change their schedules to meet our needs and fit us in is quite a testament
That's
to
right.
the value we bring to them, as opposed to what I think a lot of people are focused on is the value that they bring to us, and it's definitely a reciprocal benefit. Judy Bentz, former president for UWF and an archaeologist, and now another, again, she's authored a book called Early Spanish Florida, which is a completely different thing, but awesome, given the anniversary that we're at right now. Dr. Bentz, thank you for all the work you've done over the years. Thank you for continuing to be devoted to UWF. And as always, thank you for coming on the show this morning. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Andrew.
Absolutely. And go Argos, your favorite thing to say.
Go Argos.
Yes,
right.
Yes, ma'am. Always go Argos. Man, she's so great. I love her. 525 on News Radio 92.3. Of course, that was on Friday. We talked to her, but we always do a replay at 535, but I couldn't decide between Ryan Jenkins and Judy Bentz. I'm like, just do them both. They're both good. They're both interesting. Of course, we're going to get to a lot of the other news throughout the morning, including the amazing rescue over the weekend of that Wizzo from the backseat of the F-15E that was shot down, and the pilot as well. Separate incidents. Very, very interesting stuff. We'll get to all of that coming up this morning on the Pensacola Morning News. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, it is Christina Leavenworth.
I'm Dr. Ben McMillan with the Neal Clinic.
Hey, this is Delino with the Boot Store on Pine Forest Road.
What do these businesses have in common? They've trusted our years of marketing experience at ADX Communications.
I love radio advertising for my business, so I always love referring business over to ADX Communications for the best radio advertising out there.
We have advertised with Cat Country 98.7 over the past 10 years. Because we know radio works and Cat Country reaches our target audience.
I absolutely recommend radio to business owners. It's real, it's local, and it reaches people where they live and work.
To have your business become part of our success story, no matter if it's Cat Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, Sports Radio Pensacola 99.1, Pensacola's Playlist 94.5, or the area's most robust digital platform, call us today. 850-262-6000. That's 850-262-6000. And let ADX go to work for you.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance tech at a university, he knows ordering from multiple suppliers takes time away from keeping their arena up and running. That's why he counts on Grainger to get everything he needs, from lighting and HVAC parts to plumbing supplies, all in one place. And with fast, dependable delivery, he's stocked and ready for the next tip-off. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I
filed my return,
but I haven't.
1 in 4 tax-paying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
1 in 4 was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
The Pensacola housing real estate market has been crazy for the past few years.
How do you know when to buy or sell?
You'll need an expert to help you. Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel this Thursday at 9 a.m. right after Pensacola Morning News to hear real estate expert Christina Leavenworth with Leavenworth Realty discuss current real estate conditions. That's Thursday at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
You're busy. You just need to know what's happening.
What's happening?
Pensacola right now.
With Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7. On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Like me when I'm angry. Thanks, such a great show. When was the last time you watched an episode of The Incredible Hulk with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno?
Oh, that's my God. Been 30-something.
40 probably years?
Yeah.
That's crazy. 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Good morning. Horrid story about somebody not here in our area in Northwest Florida, but you had a dad elsewhere in Florida. This is in Juneau Beach, was out for Easter with their three kids, visiting his parents in South Florida. This is Wednesday, and two of his kids get caught in a rip current. Your dad, what do? Well, you go. I mean, obviously you go, right? What I mean, you know, I know that the advice is if you can't save yourself, but you couldn't live with yourself if you don't go. So he goes, and he saves them, but very common story, the exhaustion created by him rescuing them, and he dies. He perishes in the waves. His wife, of course, she was not in the water, learned that she was just pregnant with their fourth.
No.
Yeah. And said he was a hero. He saved the kids. It was exactly who he was, an amazing, amazing human being. That was actually a family friend, Geraldine Olilia, talking to WPBF. There's so much pain and deep into grief, but they'll overcome it together, and they will be surrounded by a community that loves them. Remarkable parallel in some ways for the sacrificial gift of Christ at Easter. And but man, just it's a reminder, when it's dangerous, it's more dangerous than you think.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Trump since Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for Iran to strike a deal to end the war, and steps apparently are taking place.
Pakistan's army chief has reportedly been holding overnight talks with Vice President J.D. Vance, Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, and Iran's foreign minister. Under the proposal, a ceasefire would take effect immediately, reopening the Strait of Hormuz with 15 to 20 days to finalize a broader settlement.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer, a top Iranian. An official eliminated.
Major General Majid Kadimi has been killed. According to a senior Israeli official, a joint U.S. and Israeli strike overnight took out the man who was considered effectively the number two within the IRGC. He's one of the few senior commanders, I'm told, who managed to survive multiple waves of Israeli and American targeting over the past year.
Fox's Trey Yanks, America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 58 degrees here across the area. We'll get to our forecast with Brooke Richardson. That's up in just a few minutes. A chain reaction crash near a convenience store in Escambia County sent a pickup truck plowing through a parking lot and into a food truck on Saturday. The Florida Highway Patrol says a Dodge Ram pickup rear-ended a Chevy Silverado on County Road 95A near Tate School. The impact redirected the Ram then into a nearby parking lot where it hit two parked vehicles and Frontera's taco food truck, injuring a 26-year-old man that was inside of that truck or inside of that food trailer. The truck finally came to rest after hitting a utility pole. The Ram's driver, a 46-year-old Flomaton man, was taken to the hospital with non-serious injuries. He was cited for careless driving. The driver of the Silverado was not hurt in that crash. Northwest Florida high school students took to the track at Five Flags Speedway over the weekend, racing custom-built electric go-karts on Saturday as part of Florida Power and Light's Electrathon program. Teams from Navarre High School, West Florida High School of Advanced Technology, Northview High School and Magnet Innovation Center competed against teams from across the state. Students designed and built their own electric vehicles using STEM principles while developing critical thinking and teamwork skills. FPL sponsors the Electrathon program at nearly 30 schools across the state. A family of six has been displaced after a fire in Okaloosa County. That happened Saturday night in Fort Walton Beach. Ashley Strickland and her five children were not home at the time, so nobody was hurt, but their home was destroyed. The Red Cross is helping the family stay in a hotel. Meanwhile, a GoFundMe has been set up to help them with their immediate needs and to begin rebuilding their lives. Their goal is $10,000. So far, they've raised about $3,500. Senator Rick Scott is, in his words, overjoyed that an American pilot was rescued in Iran. President Trump announcing that successful rescue yesterday of the man that he described as a highly respected colonel. Senator Scott says the prayers of countless Americans have been answered, and he says he's grateful for the daring and decisive work of the search and rescue operation. Senator Ashley Moody called the rescue an incredible undertaking and a powerful reminder of our commitment to never leave a service member behind. Meanwhile, President Trump is planning a news conference to discuss that more at 1 o'clock today. It is 5:34. Let's get a check on our forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be looking at temperatures warming up today around 68 degrees with some breezy conditions. Mostly cloudy skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 54. As you go into Tuesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 76. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 59 degrees. Heading into Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 75. And Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 60 degrees. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. 58 degrees right now. We've got cloudy skies. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The U.S.-Iran war, Strait of Hormuz closure, and rising oil prices are squeezing businesses and consumers across the economy. Surging diesel and jet fuel prices led Amazon and JetBlue to add surcharges last week. Experts call it a tax on the consumer. Taiwan's Foxconn, the world's largest contract electronics maker, reported a nearly 30% year-on-year rise in first quarter revenue on strong demand for artificial intelligence products, though it cautioned about volatile global politics. Revenue for NVIDIA's biggest server maker and Apple's top iPhone assembler jumped to more than $66 billion. Mortgage rates have climbed to their highest level since September as fallout from the Iran war ripples through financial markets. Freddie Mac reports the average interest rate for a 30-year mortgage jumped to 4.46%. Mortgage rates stood at roughly 6.64% a year ago. Futures are moderately higher as tensions in the Middle East escalate. On Thursday, the Dow Industrials lost 61. That's Your Money Now.
Tickets for the third annual Night at the Museum Gala are on sale now for Friday night, May 8th, featuring special guest speaker, Vice Admiral Jeffrey Caesar Cherico. Table sponsorships are $1,400 all in, and individual tickets are $175, but you can save 20% at checkout with the promo code EARLYBIRD. Get tickets and all things Pensacola Navy Days at PensacolaNavyDays.org. Spend an evening of fine dining under the planes and support Pensacola Navy Days. That's PensacolaNavyDays.org.
The Santa Rosa County Youth Livestock Show is this Saturday, April 11th, beginning at 9 a.m. at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds, 8700 Randy Brown Road in East Milton. Blue-blooded hogs and cattle will be shown all day and auctioned at 6 p.m. Families with kids who want to show animals should come out. There will be bounce houses and barbecue for your kids, too. Brought to you by Santa Rosa Medical Center, Adams Homes, Cox Communications, and Pinelands Nursery. The Santa Rosa County Youth Livestock Show, feeding the future.
You know what keeps most people up at night?
It's not politics.
It's money. Dave Ramsey helps you take control of it, one decision at a time. Real callers, real situations, and straight talk about getting out of debt, building wealth, and finally telling your money where to go.
Where to go.
Instead of wondering where it went.
Where it went.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights 7 to 10 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local.
Local.
Dependable.
Dependable.
Well, life on the farm, I kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy to me can't hack. Early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy.
And I can take you for a ride on my big green tractor. We're just country boys and girls getting down on the farm. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
Yes, it is our monthly update where we check in with our good friend and farmer, Ryan Jenkins, the owner of Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida, and find out what's going on the farm. Ryan, welcome back, sir. Happy Good Friday.
Good morning, y'all. How you doing? Happy Good Friday to you.
Doing great. Doing wonderful. We got a lot of stuff to get to with you. Let's start with some of the news, and then we'll get to what's going on for you on the farm. Obviously, farming has been a lot in the news lately. The governor just signed the farm bill. There's a lot of elements to it. I have not read it, so I'm counting on you to tell me what's in it, what matters, what's good, what's bad. What do you think?
It's good. The state farm bill, excuse me, the state farm bill is good. It's just more so to help protect the farmers. It's common sense stuff you wouldn't believe. Like there's a law in there that will allow us to always be able to use gasoline and diesel.
Oh, we're gonna have to check in with Ryan again real quick because we just lost him on the phone. But he'll call right back. Hey, listen, one of the things that we prove, if nothing else, whenever we talk to Ryan, is the cell phone coverage in the north end of Santa Rosa County is what do I want to call it? Terrible. So, hey, Ryan, you back, brother?
Yep, let's try it.
Yeah, there I know.
That's the story of my life right there.
I was just going to say, this is a great, whenever you drop off because we're talking to you, it's like a reminder to people that the cell phone service in North Santa Rosa is not good, but that is a fact of life that farmers deal with all the time, and it interrupts you in a lot more significant way than just interrupting some guy on the radio talking with you. So it's a good reminder. Anyway, you were saying about the farm bill. First of all, it allows you to use gas and diesel-based engines instead of having to convert to electric, which is common sense.
Right. That's something I can't believe that we had to spend time and effort and all that to make a law to protect us from getting our gas and diesel engines taken away from us. That's the kind of stuff that bogs things down and makes it so hard for all of us, not just agriculture, just for all of us to do our jobs. It's like, I don't understand where some of this non-common sense stuff comes from anymore. But,
right.
But that's a perfect example. So there's a lot of stuff like that in there. There's a lot of conservation type stuff. Protecting rural lands, you know, different things like that. So it's a good bill. It's kind of a different bill than the federal bill, you know, that comes from Washington. So it's a very good thing, and basically it just helps us be able to protect our livelihood.
Speaking
of the way I look at it,
No, good idea. That's good. I was just thinking about in conservation, since we're talking about that a little bit, Rhett Rowell and the county commission recently created. I want to praise this because it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It feels like it's a little bit more celebration than substance because the amount of funding increase that's going to go into this is sort of to be determined. But the push anyway is to try to conserve farmland in Santa Rosa County. But you're much closer to this than I am. I know they talk about talking to you all the time and getting input on it. You tell me what you think of the deal that they've made.
I think it's good. You know, we've talked on here many times. I truly want to protect farmland, our way of life, our ability to feed and clothe ourselves. And it's bigger than a Santa Rosa County issue, right? We're just talking about it in Santa Rosa County, but it's all across the country. I mean, we're already down to less than 2% of the country's population are farmers. So we can't get much lower and still be farming, which we've talked about before as a matter of national security.
Right.
But I also don't want to be, excuse me, the person that tells you what you can and can't do with your land. I don't want it to get to that. So I've said many times before, I just feel like we have to have a lot of options, a lot of tools in our toolbox. So if somebody does want to protect their ag land, they can. I don't want anybody to be forced to do anything. I want it to be completely voluntary. I want it to be an option, but I want it to be a viable option. And conservation easements is one way to do that. So what Rhett and them have done is provide a way that farmers or people that own ag land, it don't have to be a row crop farmer like me, you know, it can be a pasture land or a forest land, but we can, they'll have a program where you can get paid some money to sell your, put land in conservation forever. So now you still retain ownership. The landowner still retains ownership of the land. They've just given away their right to ever be able to develop it. So they've been paid some money so that that land will be in conservation for the rest for eternity, basically, if that all makes sense.
Oh, yeah. It's another tool
in the toolbox if you want to do that. And still, you can sell your land later or whatever, but it'll just have a conservation easement on the deed.
And so, you know, you have various, like, there's a handful of different tactics for doing this. There's outright sale of the land. That's not what you're talking about. There's transfer development rights, or as you say, conservation easements on there, restricting what you can actually put on the surface. Because, as you've said so many times, once you plant houses, you never plant anything else. And this would essentially, you pay the farmer off for sacrificing the profit potential of getting the land sold and or developed into, you know, residences or businesses or whatever. But it's a way of protecting it and compensating people for the promise that it will always be protected, which it will always be protected. And I am certainly on board with that. That makes all the sense in the world to me, because we do have to think about this strategically and as a national defense priority as well. We're talking to Ryan Jenkins, the owner of Jenkins Farms up in Jay, Florida. Ryan, you may have heard we got involved in a war in the Middle East. It may have affected fuel prices. Just when you protected yourself from having to go electric, you turn right around and now fuel prices are way up. I assume this is yet another day of great blessing for the ease and profitability of being a farmer.
It is. But one more thing before we move on to that.
Oh, sure.
Andrew,
yeah, yeah.
I want to bring up about the deal that Rhett and the county commission are doing and that I think is important for people to understand. And I don't have all the real numbers, but I can tell you how it works, and I want people to understand it because it's important. Let's just say that the county said, all right, we're going to fund this with $1 million. Well, that's not the end of it. That is the important part for people to see. If the county puts up $1 million, the state might put up another million or two, and then the federal government might put up $3 or $4 million. They match all those funds. So, you know, a little bit of money on the local level in the end, it turns out to be a lot of money. And I think that's important. That's another important piece of the puzzle that people need to understand about what they passed.
Absolutely.
So it's voluntary, and a little bit of money turns into a lot of money.
At the end of the day,
we've conserved farmland.
So often, we see this be the case that, you know, you can bring a lot more money to the table from outside sources if you put up a little of your own, you know, locally. So, no, leverage is a great tool in this toolbox. Fuel prices, how I know it's bad. How bad is it for you?
It's really bad. On February the 17th, we filled up our tanks there on the farm with off-road fuel for $3. It was $3 even. That's what we paid. Yesterday it was $5.29 a gallon. So that's 76% increase. And we've talked before, you know, economic times on the farm are as challenging as they have ever been. They're about as bad as they've ever been. And, you know, there's just really no room for hiccups like that. And it's a shame that, you know, really, they should never be able to raise the price of fuel enough to make it where it literally hurts you on your farm. Your farm should be able to sustain something like that. That's just showing you how rough things are right now, that just the increase in fuel prices could really make a big difference on your outcome at the end of the year on your farm.
Now, I know inputs.
You should be able to absorb that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know inputs are always a concern, and you have no control over them. And we've talked previously about what the tariffs are doing to them and so forth. But this one especially, what'd you say, 76%? And that, you know, for people who may be kind of new to this conversation, the farmer, you, cannot just turn around and, you know, when you finally do harvest your corn or your peanuts or your cotton or whatever, you can't just turn around and increase the price by so many dollars per bushel in order to get, or bale or pound, in order to get the compensation. In a normal business, look, if you're paying more for, you know, wood, then you're selling houses for a higher price. And if you're paying more for, you know, engine parts, then you're selling cars for a higher price. The farmer who's paying more for fuel is selling his cotton for the same price, right?
That's That's exactly, yes, or lower. whatever they tell you, they'll pay you for it. So, yeah, I mean, that fertilizer's gone up over 50%. And right now is the time of the year, you know, that we're using, we will use pretty much in our area in the southeast, we will use all the fertilizer we use from about March through June or July, and it'll be over with for this year. So, you know, it's not like we can wait till later when the prices go down to feed our crops. We have to do it now, and it just happens to be when the prices are the highest. So there's no way to mitigate that.
Is that tariff related? That's not war related. That's tariff related, right? The fuel is war related. The tariffs are the fertilizer's tariffs.
No, it's war related.
Oh, okay.
They've gone up that much since the war started.
Wow. So it's both of those.
Big deal.
So fertilizer, particularly, this is like twice in a year now. The government shutdown killed you guys on the loan program. That delayed a lot of your payments back that you then owe to the bank. Now on the other side, you know, we're involved in a war that may be over within a month or two. It may not be, but you're getting hit again with the kind of inconvenient timing. You know, that's happened. That's affecting you both on the price of diesel and also on the price of fertilizer. Wow. Okay. All right, well, happy days. anything else you want to tell us about?
No, I want people to know. I mean, it sounds bad, and it is bad, and I want people to know the truth. But, man, I'm still the most blessed guy you'll ever meet. I'm so lucky to get to do what I love, and somehow at the end of the day, God just always makes things work out somehow. It's just like right now, we're in a major drought. We're about... This year on my field, I keep up with it all electronically. Most of my fields in this area here have had about 6 inches of rain since the beginning of the year. Our 10-year average on those same fields is 14.8 inches.
Good Lord.
So we're about to start planting. We're starting with a major drought. You know, Pop always said you never want to start the year with the ponds dry. If you look around all the wet weather ponds and things like that, all the ponds and the rivers are dried up.
Yeah.
It's not a good start. So, you know, we're all concerned about that. I hope everybody will pray for us and send us the rain that we need and the sun that we need, and that we just really need to have a good year.
What are you getting ready to plant right away?
We just finished up corn this week. So we're through with that. It's planted, and a lot of it has already come up. We've worked hard on it for about the last week or so. And we're pretty much shut down now waiting for rain. We can't get our plows into the ground because the ground's so hard. Mm. So, and there's not enough moisture to plant. So as soon as it starts raining, we get – and I don't mean like a quarter or a half-inch rain. You know, we're going to have enough rain to really get into the ground and make the moisture meet and get it where we can get back to work. But once that happens, within the next couple of weeks, we'll start on peanuts, and then just a few days after that, we'll start on cotton. So the year will be begun.
Well, and for people who, again, are kind of new to this conversation, it's a reminder that, you know, in Florida, we don't do irrigation because we have plenty of rain all the time, except for just not right now. And so it's not like you can turn the sprinklers on and loosen up the ground and plow because you've done that. You're literally waiting on God to open up the heavens and make it happen. So we got fuel prices are up. That's bad. We got fertilizer prices are up. That's bad. The rain is way down. Based on my quick math, I'd say it's about a third to two-fifths of what it normally should be. So that's bad. We're waiting on that to figure it out. But it is Good Friday. Easter's a-coming, you know, and for Christians, God's on the throne, right?
That's right. So, amen. That's it.
You always like to end with a farm fact. Do you have one for us this week?
Yeah, I was trying to tie it all together with what we grow and, you know the drill. But so, you know, when I was a kid, Easter eggs were real eggs. Mm-hmm. They came from chickens. Now they come from petroleum. Like, most of them are plastic that I see all the kids playing with. But anyway, I was trying to tie it all together. We were planting corn, chickens, eggs. But 12% of all the corn grown in America goes to chicken feed.
Huh.
So I'm trying to tie it all together. Two thirds of pretty much all chicken feed is nothing but corn. So,
all right, there you go.
12% of our corn goes to feeding the chickens to make the Easter egg.
So you make the jeans my kids wear. You make the peanuts that go in the peanut butter and the candy bars that my kids eat, and I sometimes eat. And you also make the corn somewhat that the chickens eat that goes to make the Easter eggs. Of your omelets and of course, your chicken fingers and all of that kind of stuff. Okay. All right. See, we depend on the farmer in 1,000 different ways. Ryan Jenkins, he's the owner of Jenkins Farms in Jay, Florida. Ryan, I love that you exist. I love that you do what you do. I know your whole community enjoys hearing you on the radio, and I appreciate all of them as well, and you represent them, and it's important to be reminded of where all this stuff comes from. Thanks for feeding and clothing my kids, brother. We'll talk to you again next month.
Hey, thank you so much for having us. I hope everybody has a great Easter, and I'll see you soon.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because we got rain yesterday. Some rain yesterday. It was about an inch in my house, although the official says it's more like 2/3 of an inch. But when it was raining, I'm like, oh, good, because it was like raining right at church time, so everybody's going into the church and raining, 11 o'clock, and I'm thinking, well, at least Ryan's getting rain. Yeah, Jay got 1/3 of an inch. What did he say at the end? We need rain, but 1/3 to 1/2 an inch is not enough to do it. So does that even make much of a difference for him? Well, it's not nothing. But it's also not adequate, unfortunately. 5:55 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Making the wrong choice can be very costly. Choosing the wrong plumbing company can cost you a lot of money. Hi, I'm Judy Lacey with Barbary Plumbing, and we've been repairing Pensacola's plumbing problems for over 50 years. We are the local originator of the flat rate pricing system, so you don't have to pay by the hour, and there are no surprises. When you need a plumber, make the right choice and call Barbary Plumbing. We will make your plumbing great again.
License number RF11067749.
Hurricane season begins June 1st, but preparation starts now. Florida's severe weather season is underway, and the same steps that help you prepare for hurricanes, making a plan, gathering supplies, and staying informed, also help protect you during severe weather today. For simple step-by-step guidance, visit floridamakeaplan.com. One plan can help you prepare for many storms. Brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the University of Florida, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
In a world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, we understand, and we have your back. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join us Wednesday on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, weekdays 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Do you enjoy pain?
Pain don't hurt.
In the back of your skull, isn't it, John?
It is.
You know that voice, but it wasn't a lot, and so it's hard for you to remember. It's Dalton in Roadhouse. Patrick Swayze telling the doctor, pain don't hurt. Liar. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Man, I'll tell you what, next hour, not right now, I don't have time to do it, but next hour we're going to get into the rescue that took place over the weekend. Unbelievable stuff, a lot of information, a lot of uncertainty also about some of that information, but we'll get to all of that. Meanwhile, this is just, I thought this was kind of a funny story, is to thwart artificial intelligence, a Cornell professor of Germany did kind of a weird thing. She, kids on their screens, on their laptops.
Did you say Cornell University in Germany?
No, professor of Germany. Professor of German, excuse me.
Oh, okay.
At Cornell, sorry. Professor of Germany. Oh, I'm a professor of Germany.
I was like, wow, new majors.
Yeah, what's that? Don't ask. Anyway, she was frustrated because she felt like, modern technology and that she's getting all these perfect polished essays and, they're learning. And so how is it that? Well, because they're running it through the AI to make it better than they can do it, which is cheating/just not good for their education. So her solution is that when they're working on their assignments in class or when they're taking tests, she gave them a device to help them, a typewriter.
Oh.
She went and bought a bunch of, like, used, secondhand, on discount, eBay, whatever, typewriters. And so she had to teach them how to use a typewriter and what a carriage return means.
Oh, is that why they call it a return on the keyboard?
Yes, dear.
Yes, yes dear.
And, you know, what's that dinging for? Anyway, so the people in the school, people in the class, I was so confused. I'd seen typewriters in movies. But I'm true. My kids have never seen a typewriter, but they don't tell you how a typewriter works. Computer. Anyway, I didn't know there was a whole science to using a typewriter. She explained the dinging, the carriage return, all of that kind of stuff. In order to have, and with edits, it shows pictures of them like manually then going back and editing, you know, the papers or whatever. So, okay, it's a fun story. It's a cute story. It sounds neat that, you know, these kids would learn how to use the old people technology that even old people don't use anymore. But here was the one thing I did not understand about the story, and I do not have an answer, so I cannot explain it to you, but why not just have them handwrite?
Pencil and paper.
You didn't need to go do the typewriter. You could just have them do it with, you know, penmanship. Local.